You have to pay for that.
It sounds like it's working.
It looks nice. It's new, even.
No, I'm talking about the other book.
The Education, Finance, and Economic Competitive Division will come to order. It's 4 o'clock. Today's agenda is alternative learning opportunities. And we have Terry Lindell, who is from the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs, here to tell you who they are and some of their issues that they have that of concern that came about because of our previous meetings. That Mr. Lindell saw me in the hallway and stopped. He had written to us via email as a result of a previous meeting, and then he introduced himself in the hallway, and then I took him because I had just talked to Representative Greiling about alternative options that we have, and it just fit right in for today's meeting. So welcome to the committee, Mr. Lindell.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee, for the request to come before you and introduce ourselves and tell a little bit about ourselves and let you talk with some of our students also. Our aim is to improve the picture of the kids that we deal with, which is about 170,000 students in the learning options, taking their education outside the traditional school system. My name is Terry Lindell, and I am president of the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs. Also at the table with me are Mr. Brad Englund, from the executive director of the Metropolitan Federation of Alternative Schools, and Mr. Eugene Piccolo, the executive director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. We have several students with us, and we will introduce them as we go through our presentation. But before we get too far along in our presentation, I want to comment about the three associations that are sitting at the table here. We are each independent and autonomous organizations. Although there is some overlap in our membership, we each have areas of concentration of the various types of learning alternatives that are in our memberships. Besides the fact that we work with students who are taking their education outside the traditional school system, we have a great deal of common ground between us and our organizations, and that is we focus on innovation, effectiveness, and the creation of new learning opportunities for all students. We have agreed to work together by communicating on a continuous basis about the mutual concerns and problems and coordinated actions. We do not speak for each other unless we have the express permission to do that. The agenda, as we discussed, Madam Chair, is telling you a little bit about who we are, the P16 initiative concerns that we have, and our concerns about MDE. We figure our presentation should be 40 to 50 minutes at the outside. To start off with, who is MAP? MAP is a statewide all-volunteer professional association whose 800 members work in the learning options programs in the state. Our members work in such programs as learning area centers and programs, contract alternatives, charter schools, online schools, sober recovery, special education, juvenile justice, and mental health programs. Our membership is an individual membership versus a school membership, and many of our members belong to other professional associations. 23% of our members are administrators, 74% are teachers, and 3% are support personnel like counselors and social workers. MAP is organized with a 15-member voting board with 6 statewide elected officers, 9 regional directors, and also sitting on the board is 1 ex officio, 7 committee chairpersons to make a board of the whole of 23 people. MAP works to provide the space teachers need to work so that they can do the work that's necessary to work with students successfully. This work is accomplished in several ways. We do staff development at statewide and regional conferences and workshops. We have a youth group called STARS. Communications via the website, listserv, newsletter, and regional meetings. We have specialty network groups. We have a legislative platform. We are members and co-founders of the International Association of Learning Alternatives, and we partner rather strongly with the Charter Association, the Contract School Association, the Online Association, and others as we need to. In the past year, MAP has held 12 regional and statewide events for 2,000 students, 12 regional and statewide staff development events for teachers and administrators, and granted $4,000 in scholarships to students. Over 300 members work regularly to contribute thousands of hours of volunteer time to make these events a reality. The predominance of our membership is in the area learning centers, and area learning centers, for the committee members who may not be familiar with them, they are formed by one or more school districts. They are open to attendance from other students. Students must meet 12 defined criteria in order to attend an ALC, such things as they are homeless, abused, pregnant, involved with drugs, a year behind, testing behind their peers, and so on. I would like to introduce a student to talk a little bit about his experience with the Area Learning Center, and that is Ryan Tantilla. I'll have him slide up here.
Welcome to the committee, Ryan Tantilla.
Good evening, Madam Chair. I'm here to talk a little bit about my experience in high school and alternative schools. Now, high schools are orientated to hit the majority of the population in high schools, and not that there isn't programs that are tailored to higher and lower end students, but sometimes students still slip through the cracks. It's inevitable. And I was unfortunately one of those students that slipped through the cracks. I found myself becoming bored with a lot of the material that we had in class, and that boredom ended up turning into a rebellious kind of behavior, and I ended up getting in trouble a couple of times. Long story short, I ended up getting kicked out of school, and they always accepted me back in, but I ended up falling short on credits a little bit, and so I had to find a place to go make up those credits. That place that I found was Phoenix Learning Center, which is an alternative school out of Buffalo, Minnesota, and when I was at Phoenix, they taught me several important things. One of those things was that they pushed me far with my assignments, farther than I could in a high school setting. For instance, in a high school setting, I'm a language arts teacher at this point, and I was really involved with English at that time. In a high school setting, I was only able to read novels that, you know, were long enough to finish in class, but in the alternative program, I was able to push into much harder novels, and I was able to take on longer novels. And then I was also able to push some of my research farther than I would have been able to in the high school setting. For instance, I was able to go research around at local libraries, and I found myself getting involved with some interviews with some local, some people around town, some local residents. And I don't feel that those were things those weren't options available to me in the high school setting. And another thing is I got more individualized attention, and I think that was actually something that I needed at the time, and as opposed to some of the negative attention that I was attracting for myself up at the high school. But one key important thing that I got from alternative schools was study habits and time management. I was an independent study student, and my work came in loads at the beginning of work weeks, and so I'd have to accomplish and organize my work over the whole period of the week. I didn't have somebody looking over my shoulder each day to see if I had things done, but I literally had to just map out and manage my time, and I found out that the skills of time management and study habits that I took from this alternative high school really helped me and ended up paying off in a college setting. And one of the most important things I got out of alternative school is it taught me that I needed to take my education into my own hands, and that education was a very important thing, and that, yeah, grades were important, but ultimately what was important was the knowledge that I was gaining and gathering as I went through school. But I ended up moving on, graduating from high school on time. I attended college at St. Cloud State University and recently graduated magna cum laude from there last year. I am currently working as a language arts teacher in the Bird Island Olivia Lake Lillian School District. This is my first year through there, and I'm taking some of my extra time now to help at-risk students and help them come around. So it's important that now that I'm also helping other students, and I don't really see my case as a recovery case, but a very normal case, because we all make mistakes, but should the timeliness of those mistakes take away from our right to an education? Should a small teenage error derail the rest of our lives? I don't think so. And I think alternative schools really do a good job of getting students back on track so they can eventually become productive adults, and I support them at any chance I possibly could. Thank you.
What a wonderful story. And do you just love teaching?
Oh, I love teaching. I love the different personalities that are out there, and I love passing on just knowledge in itself and hard work. And those are some skills that I have got from, I can't say, from alternative schools.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're going to hold questions until after the presentation is done. There's time built in for questions after. So, Mr. Lundell.
Move on to Brad Englund.
Mr. Englund, right? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Brad Englund. I am the Executive Director of an outfit called the Metropolitan Federation of Alternative Schools. We represent what are called contract alternatives, one of the other variations of alternative programs in the state. We've been around for over 35 years. We were founded by local community-based organizations that in the late 1960s, early 70s, were finding kids on our doorstep that were being kicked out of school, dropped out of school, and we formed these small little pocket schools in response to that. In the 1980s, we worked with the legislature to create part of the graduation incentive that covered our programming. So we've got legitimate agreements with our local districts to provide the education for kids that have slipped through the cracks. We've got about 2,400 students statewide. Most of them are in the metropolitan area. There's a document in your packet. It's got a colorful document that's the Metropolitan Federation of Alternative Schools, and it describes our organization. There's 14 member agencies, 18 sites, 1,800 students in our schools. We talk about the legislation that defines who can attend our schools, and kids must possess one of 11 characteristics in order to enroll in our sites. And that those are things that behind in credits, low test scores, teen pregnancy, drug problems, and the like. So we cover the services that are needed for these young people in small settings. I've met with many members as we proceeded, Representative Hornstein, Representative Abler, Representative Erickson, Representative Greiling. So you've heard some of our stories, and we're here to join our partners in gaining a greater understanding of what we're trying to achieve. I brought with me a current student at one of our sites. Her name is Katrina Blankenship, and she's a student at PYC Alternative in North Minneapolis, and I'll let Katrina talk a little bit about her story. Katrina?
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for coming.
Okay. My name is Katrina Blankenship. I am a student, as you said, at PYC, which is a contract alternative school. I started out going to school in regular high school, Columbia Heights High School, and I noticed that I was one of those students that was slipping through the cracks. I wasn't getting my assignments done. I wasn't getting the help I needed. And I did hear that alternative schools were bad. I heard that they were for bad kids, and a friend of mine told me to go and try it out. So I tried it out, and it was much more than I thought. That the school provided, like, not so much just, they didn't care about how you learn. I mean, I said it wrong. Sorry, I'm nervous. They care about you as a person, and they care about your education. If you have problems, they'll help you with them, and they'll help you so you can pursue your goals, what you want. They make sure you have goals and know what you're looking for in your future. I enjoy the school because, I mean, it's like a family. It's like another family outside of your own family. It's, people get along. People understand. It's just different. And they have a different learning structure. The school I attend, they look at how you learn and what you learn, and it's more of a, not so much a one-on-one, but kind of more than a regular school. They pay attention to what you're good at and what you're not, and they bring out the positive skills in you and make sure you are able to expand on those. And, yeah, that's pretty much my experience. And I still attend school at an alternative school, and, yeah, I like it. And I plan on graduating in the middle of next year. I am graduating a little late, but I am graduating. And I plan on owning a business of my own. I want to own a restaurant or a coffee shop.
Are you planning on graduating and then owning the coffee shop?
Oh, yeah. Of course. I want to graduate first and then pursue my goals.
So. Yep. Wonderful. Good. Thank you. Mr. Piccolo.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Eugene Piccolo. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. The association is a voluntary membership organization composed of charter schools within the state of Minnesota. Our focus is to be an advocate for charter schools, to help build their capacity to be successful, and to assure their quality. Charter schools are Minnesota innovation that was enacted in 1991 by the legislature, and since then charter school laws have been passed in 39 other states and the District of Columbia. There are currently over 1 million students in charter schools across the country and some 4,000 schools. In Minnesota, there are 131 charter schools that span the state from Grand Marais in the northeast to La Crescent in the southeast to Bigelow, Minnesota in the southwest to Bemidji in the northwest. And those 131 schools enroll 23,600 students. They range in size and shape and program. There are K-12 schools. There are some that are elementary, some middle schools, some high schools. There are Montessori. There are language immersion schools. There's an expeditionary high school. There are science academies, arts academies, a full range of alternatives and options for young people throughout the state. Online schools. As I mentioned, there are 131 schools, and there are 51 different organizations that sponsor charter schools in the state. As you know, charters may be sponsored by traditional school districts, colleges, and universities, and nonprofits who have $2 million worth of net assets. And we do have colleges such as St. Kate's, St. Scholastica, Hamline University, several of Minsky campuses. There are a number of school districts that sponsor school districts, as well as nonprofits such as the Ordway Music Theater, the James Ford Bell Foundation, the Audubon Center up in Sandstone. So a wide variety of organizations and groups. Charter schools today enroll students at a much higher rate in terms of ethnic minorities, in terms of learning needs, in terms of at-risk behaviors than the general population of public schools. One of the things we always run into is, what is a charter school? And a charter school, as you know, is an independent public school where it's really the parents and teachers who are running the school. And by the end of the third year, our board of directors must be a majority of the teacher, must be made up of a majority of teachers who teach in the school. So there's very much true academic freedom among the teachers and parents in running the schools. And we have one of our recent graduates here, Amber Johnson from Jennings Experiential High School, to tell you a little about her story.
Ms. Johnson, welcome.
Good evening, Madam Chair. I'm Amber Johnson. I'm 18 years old. In June of 2006, I graduated from Jennings Experiential High School, which is a charter school here in St. Paul. I'm now in my second semester of college at Globe. I'm in the process of getting my bachelor's degree in paralegal studies, and my experience with project-based education and alternative education as a whole, it pretty much saved me. If I wouldn't have had the option to go the other route as far as staying in a traditional school, I don't think I would have made it. I started out at South St. Paul, and I was a freshman, and I was there about 8 months, and I was having some problems in my classes, and because of the large class sizes, I didn't have the time to sit down like with my teacher and address some of these minor issues. So, you know, I lost interest because I had, you know, took it upon myself to give myself a really good scolding and, you know, pretty much tell me I'm not good at it. So I just blocked it out of my mind. And my grades started falling, and, you know, it all went downhill from there. So I talked to my mom, and we were going to go in and see the dean. And the dean had actually told my mother that she had actually seen this coming, and this kind of happens with all minority students. Mm-hmm. So we decided from there that it was probably a good idea that we check out some other options. And we came across the South St. Paul Area Learning Center, and that's where I was introduced to project-based learning. And since I was introduced to project-based learning, I have pretty much evolved into a totally different person. I have now that I've been in project-based learning, and I've kind of developed like a deep passion to learn. It's hard to explain. As far as being in that setting versus a traditional setting, as others have mentioned, you can go so much farther with what you want to do. You can learn it, and you can teach yourself in ways different than what the traditional school would teach you. Everyone has a different learning style, and at the Area Learning Center and at Jennings Experiential High School, that fit my learning style, and that's all it took for me to really excel. So that's kind of my story.
That's a good one. Thank you so much. This learning center, then, was that before you went to the charter school?
Yeah, that was before.
Okay. And then at the charter school, what did you learn?
At the charter school, I have to be a little bit more specific as to... Yeah, it was project based, so it was, you know, it was the same as the Area Learning Center.
Okay, so. And then where are you learning this paralegal stuff?
Oh, this is at Globe College.
So you went from, you were a ninth grader at St. Paul School, and then you went to the Area Learning Center, and then you went to the charter school,
yep.
And now you're at Globe College.
Yep, I graduated.
Okay. And how long did you, how many years since you were a freshman has this taken?
4 years. I graduated on time.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amber Johnson. Harry Liddell, Mr. Liddell, tell us about your concerns with P16.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A presentation was made on P16 to this committee last week on Monday, and we believe that this initiative is a great concept, at least from the little bit that we have been able to learn about it, despite several unanswered requests to get information. It seems like what we found we can support. It seems to be an excellent process to monitor the value added to each year of a student's life in school and to aim them towards lifelong learning. So where's the concern? I want to make a connection from an existing Minnesota program to the potential of this new P16 initiative. In Minnesota, we presently have a law that helps 11th and 12th grade students attend college. It's called the Post-Secondary Enrollment Options, or PSEO. MAP members from across the state report difficulty enrolling students in college classes from the Learning Options schools. In some cases, it's poor promulgation of the enrollment process. In some programs, it is a philosophical position of the program to not record GPAs and class ranks. In some cases, members have been told things along the line of, you know, these types of students are not college material. The most universal activity that takes place regularly is every time there is a new admissions counselor, admissions director at a community college or local college, somebody from the Learning Options has to sit down with them and explain to them what Learning Options are and why the student should be enrolled in college. The PSEO and related concurrent enrollment legislation are good laws and we support them. However, as good as they are, there are some gaps and that makes it difficult for students to enroll from the Learning Options. Our concern about P16 is that in the process of developing a new and probably very worthwhile system is that we do not unintentionally design in some of the same or similar gaps. The Learning Options students should not be overlooked nor added later as an afterthought. To try to avoid this, we are suggesting that the professional associations that deal with the Learning Options students be asked to sit on the P16 committees and process. We are very pleased to see Representative Mariani as chair of the College Access Committee of that task force, because we think he has a very good grasp of what the Learning Options students face. And what we're asking is simply to have that knowledge base extended, increased. Now, I have with me, Madam Chair, if you would like, a student who had a problem with the PSEO enrolling in college. And if you'd like to hear her story, I'll ask her to come up.
We sure would.
Okay. Jenna Tantilla.
We love having student stories. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Chair. And my name is Jenna Tantilla. I'm here to talk about my experience as an alternative school graduate. I'm going to start off by telling a little bit of background about my story here. I was having a very hard time getting through high school. It was a long and difficult road for me. And it was a road that I was having the difficulty finding the motivation to continue going down. I did not feel like I was getting anything from my high school experience. I was not being challenged enough. I was bored. It led me to begin to stop caring about, you know, the value of an education and how important it is. I was seriously considering dropping out, which I can't even believe I thought that now. And I'm so glad I didn't. Fortunately, I had a wonderful opportunity. I got involved with Phoenix Learning Center, which is an alternative school located out of Buffalo, Minnesota. Phoenix Learning Center is really a great school. It really allows students to work at their own rate, and it allows time and emphasis to be focused on areas where it is needed. They have a great supportive staff who really, you know, helped push me to succeed, and I was able to take my assignments and projects to greater depths than I could at any of the public schools that I had gone to before that. The Phoenix Learning Center approach to education fit my learning style a lot better. It helped prepare me for college. One of the best things about being a student at Phoenix Learning Center was the opportunity I had to go to St. Cloud State University as a PSEO student. However, I definitely ran into some roadblocks there. I applied as a PSEO student in my first half of my senior year, the first semester there, and was immediately rejected. They didn't feel I was college material. They didn't think I was going to make it through. They didn't think I'd be successful there. And, you know, this was kind of hard for me to take. I was getting straight A's. I was doing extremely well. I knew I could handle it. So fortunately, I had a great advocate, Gretchen Lieb, the director of Phoenix Learning Center, helped me through this. She was on the phone with them constantly, getting them to know my story and to know that I can do this, and it is possible, and it's very unfair that they were not letting me in. The second semester, I was let in, thank goodness, and The PSEO program is so great. It's free college. It's free books. It's great. I missed out on a whole semester of college that I could have had paid for because of this, which I thought was really ridiculous. So, you know, being a student at Phoenix Learning Center really did prepare me for the college experience. I was well prepared to take on the challenge of the increased personal responsibility and time management that was needed to be successful at the university. The guidance and drive that Phoenix Learning Center provided me was the instrument to my success in college. Education is something that is very important to me. I am now working as a tutor at the Howard Lake Area School District, and I intend on graduating next year from St. Cloud State University with a degree in art education. It is my hope that I can provide the students that I am working with some of the lessons that I have learned from Phoenix Learning Center. Thank you.
Thank you.
So the committee is aware that when I was talking with the Madam Chair about this meeting, she said, be sure you bring some real people, and so you've just seen the last of our real people. Our next concern, Madam Chair, is MDE concerns. And from the MAP perspective, I'd like to say that I will preface the remarks about MDE concerns saying that the purpose is not to blame nor embarrass anybody. We believe that anything we view as not functioning properly is a systems problem. There are very dedicated people working at MDE, and they are very concerned about the education of Minnesota's residents. We do not want the appearance in any way that we are disparaging the employees at MDE. It seems instead that these very dedicated people are caught up in a system that has evolved over time that impairs their effectiveness. It is well known in quality management circles that 85% of the problems that occur can be attributed to the system in which they happen. There is very high regard for Commissioner Alice Segrin. Her stand-up work as a legislator on behalf of Learning Options is well recognized and appreciated. She is a key person to have in place when there is any discussion about the success of all students, and we are very pleased that she is the commissioner. So what's the concern? What seems not to be working right? We do not have time here to hold a comprehensive conversation about the perceived or actual ills and how they ought to be remedied. Hopefully such a conversation can happen in the future. For right now, we want to present our view of some of the issues and concerns that cause confusion in the field and detract from the focus on student success. We believe that the major concern can be that of communication silos that prevent the proper analysis and flow of data and information about educational and financial accountability issues. Some of the examples are, many times a question posed to one section of MDE will receive a different and contradictory answer from another section. Many times schools and programs are not aware of regulations until they are confronted with them in an audit or at the end of a given reporting period. New regulations are created without input from those in the field and seem to pop up at unexpected times. There are demands made of the schools and programs with no explanation for the demand's basis in the spirit or letter of the law. There seems to be a we-they mentality concerning legal accountability that results in a caught you doing wrong kind of a situation rather than a form of cooperative, helpful relationship that gets everybody on the same page. Meetings to address issues are sometimes met with unexpectedly changed agendas and listed demands on the part of MDE. Sadly, as the president of MAP, I have to report that many of my members say that their only contact with MDE is in the area of compliance issues and not on innovation or creativity. It is becoming a compliance versus advocacy world. MAP has expressed in the past our interest and availability to partner with MDE on matters that relate to the learning options arena. We are renewing that commitment today. We want to work with MDE to assure proper financial and academic accountability and discuss opportunities in innovative ways to help all students become world-class citizens and competitors. We believe it makes good synergy to have MDE and the professional associations who are intimate with student concerns to work together for student success. That concludes my remarks, and we'll move on to Mr. Englund.
Madam Chair, members.
Mr. Englund.
I would say at this point that our experience with MDE as a contract alternative programs has been helpful. We have worked closely with our districts. Our first tier is with our own districts and then with MDE. And I think what Mr. Lydell is talking about is that students in alternative programs now represent nearly 20% of those students in Minnesota. And we don't want to be forgotten. We want to be included in those discussions. We want to help be part of the solution. We want to come up with creative ways to deal with kids that you heard from today that are struggling with traditional systems and need these kind of alternative programs. So we stand ready to work with MDE, as Mr. Lydell said, to help create some solutions that will be helpful to the students of Minnesota.
Thank you. Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair, from the perspective of the Minnesota Association of Charter School, we believe there are different perspectives in terms of different roles of each organization. As I mentioned earlier, we're an advocacy group. We're a group that's trying to build the capacity of our members and so forth to try to convene charters and to express their ideas and issues as a whole. We understand that the primary function of the department is compliance and monitoring, and that sometimes those two perspectives come into conflict. But I would say if everybody's on the same page or always marching in the same direction, then I would call the attention of the committee that something's wrong with the whole system. Because if everybody's marching all in one direction to one beat, people aren't doing their jobs. We do find at times, though, that there are those different perspectives cause sometimes a delay in the processes. There was for example, a federal grant for charter school facilities that took about 2.5 years for the system to get the money out to the schools, to the point where the federal government had kind of came to the state and said, you need to get either moving or we're going to pull the money back. So sometimes I think there are things within the structure of the bureaucracies that slow things down because of conflict in policy within an organization like the department. Having served as an assistant commissioner several years ago, I have a sense of how it all works sometimes, and sometimes I think good people are put in positions that make it very difficult to get the job done. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That concludes our remarks and open for questions.
Okay. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe this is a thought that's at least tangential to the men and students have come today to talk to us. You know, you start looking at a group of 20% or approaching, that's the alternative group. At some point, you're going to have the whole group being alternative, and the traditional group will be the alternative group pretty soon. And I know we've talked about this since I've been here. All my years, I've been on this committee or committees like it. And I hope that as we go along, as we try to find ways to narrow the achievement gap, that there's a lot of good ideas that the people that came today, I have found to penetrate some of the cultures, both ethnic and social, and all the other challenges that we face. And the answers are there, and I don't know why we can't incorporate some of these in the traditional system to make sure that all gets served. And so I hope that their trip is not just to express their concerns about some stuff, but they can export to us some of those same ideas. So does that make sense?
It does. And if I don't know how many of you had the opportunity to attend or to be visited last week when Mr. Lydell's group participants were here and there was something over at the Capitol to see the result or to see what they were presenting to us. If we had the opportunity and if more educational sites had the opportunity to see what they were doing, we would be doing exactly what you were doing. So we've just got to give them the opportunity to reach out more or to communicate more with the people in the institution, so to speak. we've all got to do a better job of working together and communicating and have more opportunities for teacher education and teacher training together. Because I bet, you know, teachers are teachers. Wherever they are, somebody's teaching, somebody's doing something for somebody. And every other teacher, I'm sure, has as many successes, but some kids drop through the cracks in one place, and some kids drop through the cracks in another place. But isn't it wonderful that we do have someplace else for them to go? That we just don't close the door and say, we're all done with you. Because when these people are 40 years old, we want them to be able to have a job and pay taxes. And be happy. And be happy. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, testifiers and students. And I want to congratulate you, students. Somebody said it's nice to have real life people here talking to us today, but you are also successful young adults, and so congratulations to you. I speak of alternative programs both as a former alternative education program director, one who started an alternative education program up in Proctor, and then also of a teacher of a in Brainerd that has a huge alternative program with Arlo Rensler, who I know you all know. And I want to just say a couple remarks and then ask a couple quick questions. The testimony, if you looked at your sheet, and it goes to what Representative Abler talked about and what Representative Murphy, Chair Murphy talked about, if you look at those and what we heard the students say is that one of the things that really helped them is smaller class sizes. Is smaller class sizes and relationships that you build up with each other. In our alternative program, both in Brainerd and in Proctor, that was the key point, is relationships. Bottom line, that's the thing that helps with the success. So even in the written testimony, the kids talked about smaller class sizes. Can you, Mr. Lytle, could you tell me what a typical class, traditional, typical kind of alternative program looks like? Because I've got another question I would like to ask you about that.
All right, is your question about typical class size?
Typical program. How does a typical program look? Give me a schedule, a curriculum. And
yes.
It's
difficult to say a typical program because one of the problems we have as an association is trying to meet the needs of such a varied group of people who are very innovative. The class size is controlled in a lot of ways by the individual attention is by the fact that for some reason... In some cases, the building simply won't tolerate any more bodies. They're just smaller places. Some are school within a school, 10 kids, one teacher. Sometimes a combination of seat time, online, project-based, independent study. The students are not necessarily all in one place at one time. Therefore, they can have the attention that they call for. So it is really difficult to say, as you know, the AEC up in Brainerd, has been around for a very long time, and incidentally, Representative Ward, there is a scholarship fund for Arlo Rensler for kids attending alternative programs, and we will be in your back door next week or this week with our conference. But the AEC in Brainerd tends to be large-ish as far as alternative programs go, but they deal with that by the independent study and bring the attention to them. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Can I just ask a follow-up, Madam Chair? Leads me to the second part of my question is, sometimes the perception is when the alternative program in Proctor, when we developed it and ran it, the seat time was exactly the same seat time as our traditional setting. In Brainerd, it's a little different. And all programs, as you said, are a little different. Sometimes the perception is that AEC, that ALC or charter school or whatever, is an easier place for a child to go. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Easier place for a child to
it's,
go?
Well, yeah, it's an easier educational setting.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that a lot of our students say is, yeah, it was easier for me here. When we probe that, because we don't want it to be watered down easy. And what really they find is some of our students here today just said, I find a place where people want me. They can tailor things to my learning style. And that makes it easier because they're not fighting the dissonance within themselves about having to be on page so-and-so on Tuesday, and if you miss Tuesday, then you might as well forget the rest of the week. You know? Does that answer your question, Representative?
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to thank you all for coming here today. You know, with I'm looking at the Department of Ed handout here that shows number of learners served in state-approved alternative programs, and 2004-2005, it's almost 146,000 students. So we're not talking about an insignificant experience here in Minnesota. We're talking, in many ways, a major delivery system and a major educational environment for many of our students, and I loved hearing Amber's, Jenna's, and Ryan's story, great stories of how that experience is panning out and producing the citizens that we want. And Katrina as well. I'm sorry, I missed the fourth person. Sorry, Katrina. I did hear you, though. I have a couple questions about the P16 and the MDE, Department of Ed, relationships. There was in the testimony discussion of regulations, not being aware of regulations, and having regulations appear. I don't know this area real well, but it seems to me that, let me just ask this. Is there, I assume we're talking about regulations that are particular or unique to the different learning options, programs, or schools. Is there a sort of one-stop place of the Department of Ed in which these different approaches to education can interact with the department in terms of ongoing regulations and development of regulations?
There is a Department of Choice, Mr. Representative, and for the area learning centers where there is 146,000 students, there is one person who is the specialist for that. At least that's the person that interfaces with the area learning center people. So that would be the focus for the ALCs, one person for that. And upline from them and the Department of Choice, there are other people then who start taking on more and more of the areas like the charter schools and so on. So their responsibility becomes greater. Does that answer your questions, Representative?
Well, I think so. I believe, Madam Chair, Mr. Piccolo would want to
Madam Chair,
as well.
Representative Mariani. In terms of charter schools, there is part of that Office of Choice and Innovation. There are people who are assigned to work with charter schools. But part of the issue sometimes is there are other parts within the department, like finance has their own people that work with charter schools and so forth, that don't necessarily always integrate with those that are working on the programmatic side with the charter schools. So there is some oftentimes disconnect between different divisions within the department because there is an Office of Choice and their focus and innovation is around the programmatic piece where the other departments, parts of the department work with finance or some other issues relating to charter schools and they don't always necessarily mesh.
Just to follow up on Representative Mariani's question then, Mr. Lydell and Mr. Englund, do you find that the department works directly with the learning center, or do they work with the school district and expect the school district to pass the information down to the learning center?
Our experience is the latter, Madam Chair and Representative Mariani. We have representatives from MDE that work with our districts, whether they be Minneapolis, St. Paul. They also come in contact with us, too. We reach out. They come to our meetings and help us to understand the regulations that we're trying to deal with. I think one of the things that we're struggling with, of course, is we've got innovative sites across the state that are trying experimental ways of dealing with kids that are struggling, and sometimes they run counter to traditional ways of managing the systems financially and so on. So that's the kind of communication link that we'd like to see deepened, is to be able to understand from department to department how we can be of best service to the students of Minnesota.
Representative Mariani.
And Madam Chair, that was my other question, too. So on the proactive side of this, what we heard from the four students here today seems to me are examples of effective practices that have produced aspiring students and successful citizens. So is there a place within the department, as you relate with the department, a place for a sharing of effective practices, not only with the department but across other quote-unquote traditional educational settings and with one another? Is that something that happens? Is that something that should be happening, that could be happening better?
Mr. Nidell.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, that is the kind of thing that we are after, is to have an open dialogue, a place where we can meet and talk. There are 500 people in the Department of Education, and they're all very busy people. I'm not sure exactly how we divert a job description to do that. Certainly it seems to me that as we try to brainstorm it, that by using the services of the professional associations, it's volunteer work. It's added personnel to address some issues, and we certainly could set up workshops to share best practices, as we are doing with our conference this week. We would be willing to assist in some way, because they are strapped at MDE. But we have people who want to volunteer. They already do volunteer thousands of hours a year, and we have an expertise in setting up workshops. Does that address your question, sir?
Madam Chair, just one final. Thank you, Madam Chair. One final follow-up. We may want to, Madam Chair, have a discussion with the department about, so you know, the big picture approach in terms of benchmarking and sharing practices throughout the entire state. And by benchmarking, I mean the process of learning from outcomes that we see in different learning environments. And so that might be a worthwhile discussion, not only in regards to the alternative learning options, but just in general as well, but certainly with an eye to be able to learn from these programs. And then my final thing, Madam Chair, and I'll stop here. You also expressed some concerns with the Minnesota P16. There are a number of different groups around that table, including professional associations and also private sector folks, and it seems to me that MAAP would be a logical addition to the P16, and so I let me just commit to you that I would work with you to communicate with the commissioner who currently chairs the P16 and the members of the P16 to issue an invitation for you to be at that table, because I think it would enrich what we're doing, what we're trying to do through the P16, and again with tens of thousands of students enrolled throughout the state, it's illogical that your voices not be at that table.
Thank you very much, Representative.
See, problem solved already. We're not even done. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was a part of an alternative program for, I think, over 20 years, and I'm glad to see my former director in the audience, Steve Allen, who runs just a fantastic alternative program.
And where was that?
Oakland, located in Cambridge, but serves St. Francis, Princeton, and Cambridge. And I did, Madam Chair, carry the alternative licensure bill and was disappointed that we couldn't move that last year or the year before, but, you know, it'll come back. Or maybe the Board of Teaching will just do it on its own. My question for one of you gentlemen, whoever wants to answer this, would be the use of the Baldrige criteria. Maybe, Mr. Englund, you could comment on why you think that's important for all alternative learning centers.
Representative Erickson, of course, you know, what she's talking about is quality standards and trying to improve what we're doing by recognizing those organizations that have met those quality standards and awarding them such recognition. We think it's very important to take a look at accountability to try and understand what we're achieving in our schools. Sometimes our schools get perceived in the wrong kind of accountability, i.e., what is your graduation rate? Well, it's very difficult if you get a student 10th, 11th, 12th grade that's a year, 2 years behind in credits, and then try and graduate them on time. So what we're trying to do, Representative Erickson and members, is to instill in our systems ways in which we can recognize progress. Are the students advancing at least a year when they're with us? Are they maybe not quite passing the Minnesota Basic Standards Test, but are they doing better than they did previously until they get to the point when they can pass? And the Baldrige criteria, other ways of measuring success in our programs, is very helpful for us to improve what we're doing. And this is a way in which we can help schools throughout the state, is to, as we said before, these best practices, and to show that these kinds of innovations can be replicated in other settings across the state.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Mr. England, have you had discussions with MDE about this, or even about other measures for your students for annual yearly progress?
Yes. We've had ongoing discussions with MDE. It's a very difficult subject because much is expected of all of our students in order to graduate and to pass basic standard tests and so on. And they are very interested in our experimentation, in the results that we're getting through our new innovations. And they would like to replicate those across the state. So they've shown interest. We've had dialogue. They've given suggestions on how we can improve these.
If I may, Madam Chair, respond to Representative's question.
Mr. Vidal.
I have had the privilege of serving as 4 years as an evaluator on the Board of Examiners for the Minnesota Council for Quality, which uses the Baldrige Standards. I'm also an ASQ-certified quality manager. And ASQ, American Society for Quality, does sponsor the Baldrige. There are a number of schools in the United States that have earned the Baldrige Award. One most notable to our neck of the woods in the alternative setting is the Chugach School District in Alaska. It is a huge landmass of area, and I call it just an alternative program that owns a lot of real estate. They didn't send anybody to college until they implemented the Baldrige, and now it's a regular happening that they send people to college. They had people who would say to their people from the school district, the Native Americans, Native Alaskans, would say to them, I can see you're from the school district, you're here to help us, and we're going to run you out of town on a rail. And they say, that's good, because it was the only way out of town. They were very hostile, and they've turned that whole district around, and I would suggest that anybody would want to go on the NIST website and see the Chugach, Alaska story. I think it tells a big story about what we can do when there is a situation where there is great dislocation, very few large schools that can be focused on, and how they, what they did for staff development. They have 30 days minimum of staff development a year for their teachers, and it's a great story. I would recommend the committee to take a look at that. Chugach School District in Alaska.
Thank you. How many of your students have IEPs?
I don't think we know that number. For the most part, the surveys that we have done, now it's different for the charter schools, there is a similar amount of special ed students in the alternative programs. It's almost the same percentage. I'm just going to grab back in my memory, I think it's like 17%, but I could be wrong on that. We do have a higher incidence of minority populations outside of that. And there are some schools that are part of the membership that are totally self-contained special ed schools. So, but given that, it still comes out to about the same percent for the ALCs.
Mr. Anglin, the same?
It's about the same percentages.
Okay. Mr. Picklow?
In terms of charter schools, all students of our special ed have IEPs, and we have three schools that are 100% special ed students. Two of them are deaf schools and so forth. We have a number of schools who, by their program design, have individual learning plans for students or career learning plans or so forth. So it depends very much on the kind of school and curriculum that they have chosen to have as part of the charter.
Thank you. Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for, is it Mr. Montgomery, the language arts teacher down, could I prevail upon you?
Mr. Tantala.
Tantala. Mr. Tantala.
Well, yeah. Madam Chair.
I misread the thing. Anyway.
Montgomery, right? Or what? Where did he get the Montgomery
from? I just read the wrong name. Actually, it was representing.
I'm from Cocado.
It was Demmer's fault.
It's just a word we'll talk about.
No. Anyway, as you know, congratulations on becoming a teacher.
Thank you.
I just retired from teaching, and I'm still not quite where I want to be financially, but you can work on it. You're young.
I'm ready for that.
But as you. One of the comments you made was that you couldn't go into enough depth, and I'm wondering if it's more the teacher than it is the setting of the traditional setting, because I've talked to AP teachers or IB teachers, International Baccalaureate teachers, who really go way in depth and don't have a problem doing that, and maybe as you teach alongside, or maybe you do teach AP courses or IB courses, have you talk to them about how, or witness how they go in depth? It seems like AP teachers do that.
I definitely agree with you that AP programs do go into depth a lot further than typical classroom settings. But I think one of the issues that I had as far as AP and getting into depth went was some of my behavioral issues kept me from getting into some of those AP courses. And the fact that getting kicked out of school once or twice, that didn't really reflect nicely on that. But AP, as far as I see the difference in depth between an AP class and what I was allowed at the alternative school setting, AP students are prescribed books there. You know, they have to read certain material, whereas I had a vast choice of things to choose from, and it was my responsibility to make those choices. I think when I was actually in the alternative learning program, the book that I chose to read was Crime and Punishment, Dostoevsky, and that would be hard to get through on school time, I think. And time issues would be another concern as far as depth goes. So,
I think one follow-up.
And
I was curious, as you address your class, you might see students that have some behavior problems themselves. Do you see your experience as beneficial to them? And do you go in depth? You're reading the thick books like you were talking about? Yeah.
I do as good as I can with the public school setting. I do, however, try to focus some of my attention towards some of the kids that I see heading in the same direction that I have. Like I do take, right now I'm tutoring outside of school to some kids that have ran into some issues. And so, I take the lessons that I've learned and I use them well, but I do have limitations in my setting, in the public high school setting. There are limitations that I can, and I try to utilize what I can, but like I said, there are some drawbacks.
Thank you. You're well placed, I believe you. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's interesting because I have served on the Governor's Workforce Development Council and chaired a committee, and we spent our last year dealing with students at risk, particularly those who would be graduating or entering the workforce. And we spent a great deal of our time on alternative learning centers because that seemed to be an issue for many of our students at risk, at least places where many of them went. And I was really impressed with the curriculum and the kind of education that many of these students were getting. And it did seem to revolve a great deal around the issue of relationships. Two issues that came up. One was the coordination with either higher ed institutions or tech colleges, and kind of was there, with the future workforce, and was there real coordination either with counselors with those institutions, or were students kind of left on their own to find their own way into the workforce or into the colleges? You talked about the PSEO, and you know, everybody's interested, it seems like, in outcomes, not in inputs. So as much as we like to talk about the value added, we're into No Child Left Behind and even more emphasis on high school graduation standards. And I know with the post-secondary options issue, that criteria is hotly discussed in the high schools and in the learning institutions, obviously within your group also, as was indicated by the young student who had trouble getting into St. Cloud State. There are a lot of reasons for that, but I'm wondering, do you think the criteria is coherent? Is it consistent enough so that people know when a child or a student is ready for a college setting? Where's the problem? Is it a lack of criteria? Is it the lack of counseling? Where do we not have clear guidelines about the post-secondary options? It seems to me that this is a constant issue of concern, particularly when you get into some of the smaller schools in greater Minnesota, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Liddell.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson. I think it's an interesting, it is an interesting discussion. It does have good criteria. It aims at a certain group of people, but it's criteria that has to be put on paper. The thing that we find in the schools in dealing with the children is that they have different interests. They go different directions. They have some great strengths that aren't apparent on the outside. And many times, like some of our students have presented today, they will do things that will, in some terms, shoot themselves in the foot as far as a GPA and so on. But that doesn't mean that they aren't capable people. But if we have just the criteria that we have in PSEO and hold to that, then we exclude a number of people. When we discuss how could we fix that, maybe we need to have better discussion between the K-12 section and the technical and liberal arts colleges, and I would even throw in the apprenticeship programs that the labor unions have around the state. They have some excellent training facilities. Some kids are ready, and as you heard with Gretchen Lieb and her two students, they were ready. They were ready, but they didn't look ready on paper, but the teacher knew, because the teacher worked with them all the time and knew them well, and the college didn't know them. So how would they know? It's a curse of knowledge kind of situation. So we have to find a way for the two different levels of the system to work together to maybe trust more what it is the professionals see at the high school level and where we should try to access the post-secondary level. Sometimes it isn't because the kid's going to go to Harvard and become an astrophysicist. Sometimes it's because they very simply need to have exposure to what that environment is. And whether they succeed or fail in the class that they take, they walk away knowing what the inside of a college looks like. And maybe when they're 30 or 40 years old, they won't be as intimidated, and they would be willing to go back. We do have a situation from Southeast Tech School where some special ed students in a transition program were refused admittance because they're troublesome kids. One kid failed. All of the rest had A's and B's. And never was there a report of a problem to the teacher who sent them. Why the change? That shouldn't have to be happening. That teacher spent almost lost her job trying to get those kids into college for an exposure situation. So, Representative Peterson, you bring up a very good point. I want to thank you for asking that question. We maybe need a different avenue to get kids exposed instead of just one set criteria.
Mr. Piccolo.
Representative Murphy and Representative Peterson, I think part of it also is attitudes of the system and of institutions. One of the things we've just found out in the last month or so is that students who come from alternative schools, from charter schools, and from online schools, in terms of moving on beyond high school, if they want to go into the military, are considered Tier 2 students. Tier 1 students are considered students who the military just accepts on face that their graduation is okay. Cheer students have to take a whole series of tests and exams and other things to show that they can follow orders. So we're trying to address that. I mean, that's a systems issue in terms of attitude, in terms of opening up opportunities to young people who've gone through alternative systems of education that we need to address. And I think the other issue oftentimes with young people is that they don't have the social networks. A lot of the kids who are in alternative schools don't have the social networks that a lot of middle-class, kind of ordinary, run-of-the-mill citizens have. And so they don't have those connections and those experiences to help them be prepared for those kinds of experiences. And that reflects then in terms of how they present themselves and where they're at in terms of getting into some of these programs.
Thank you. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question has been addressed a little bit when Representative Erickson asked her question, but I want to go back and kind of just get more to kind of the idea of a graduation rate. I understand that you like to be evaluated on progress, and we have students who are alternative. Well, once they enter the system, it isn't fair to measure them kind of in the same ways. You know, but ultimately speaking, you know, we want to know what the outputs are as well. So, I mean, I guess do you have a number, a graduation rate that would kind of represent if a student enters an alternative learning program, when they leave that program, whenever it is, what percentage of them are reaching that level of a high school diploma and can move on from there?
Mr. Englund.
Yes, Representative. What I'm talking about is we want to be measured fairly. We want to be held accountable. We want to show results. And what I mentioned with the graduation rate is that normal graduation rate is if a student enters the ninth grade, does he or she graduate with his class, his or her class, 4 years later? Well, if you get into an alternative school 2 or 3 years down the road and you're behind, you're not going to make it in the four-year standard. And so it's unfair to hold that alternative school responsible for the kid not graduating in the four-year period. But what we want to be held responsible for, did that kid make 1 year of progress or more? Did that student advance on their credits earned in such a way that they could graduate in a reachable way? I think that the other thing we're talking about is test scores. It's right now it's either pass or fail. And if a student comes in with a third grade reading level and they're in the ninth or tenth grade, then it's going to be very difficult for them to pass the test. But if they can show in an alternative program they can make a year or 2 years progress, that's what we're talking about, is how are our students improving in such a way that they could graduate. I wanted to say this too, that what I've noticed about the alternative programs would be the following. I think they're successful for three reasons. One is the small classroom size that was mentioned. Our classes in our schools are 8, 10, 12, 15 kids max in a class. So they're getting the individualized help that they need. Dedicated teachers that are certainly looking at the mission of serving these kids. And there are great teachers in all institutions across the state. But those that step forward in an alternative setting are mission-filled. But third and most important, why are these kids making progress, is that the students themselves, they want to graduate. They want a diploma. They want to make something themselves. They don't want to drop out. They don't want to be a failure. So this gives them an opportunity where they feel comfortable, they can make the progress necessary to graduate and be successful citizens.
Representative Eastland.
I understand that, and that's what you said when you answered Representative Erickson's question. But my question is when a student enters an alternative learning center, we've heard some wonderful success stories here today about students that came into an ALC program, they graduated, went on to college teaching. All I'm asking is when a student does enter an ALC program, what percentage of those students, when they leave, actually are moving towards graduating? I mean, I'm sure they're progressing. Somebody starts in ninth grade and maybe they go through 11th grade before they drop out of school. I mean, they're making progress, but they're still counted as a dropout in traditional school. I'm just saying, once they enter an ALC program, how typical is the success story that we heard here today? How many of them actually move through and graduate and then move on from that point?
Mr. Liddell.
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, we'd like to know the answer to that, too. It would take a longitudinal study, and we'd like to have that, to track students from the time they enter in, not only just to the graduation point from the alternative program, but also on to what they do after they leave us. And I think, and I'm going to circle back and say, I think that this is the kind of thing that the P16 initiative is aimed to look at. I'm not entirely certain, but we need to have hard data on that. And we can get that data. It's a matter of us surveying. It's not going to be as scientific as we would like to have. But an answer to your question is, we'd like to have an answer to your question.
Representative Rukavina.
No.
Thank you very much. Well, the students that have completed their ALC and their higher education program, volunteers, tell us if you have debt from your college, from your training program. Ryan?
Madam Speaker. Yes, I, well, I just graduated here in 2006, and I do have, I did look at some stats, and I am looking at about average debt. Average debt for a four-year school.
$30,000?
About $20,000. And I think average was $22,000.
Okay. Not if you've listened to the people that have testified and represented Rukavina's committee this year. It's higher.
You're lucky, Ryan.
Amber Johnson?
Before you leave, can I ask you something, Ryan? Ryan? Could I ask you before you leave?
Absolutely.
How much did you qualify for any special programs like those workforce development programs or programs that are geared towards, did you get any type of scholarships or help through that at all, or did you just get regular grants?
It was pretty much, yeah. It was pretty much just straight loans. I didn't really qualify for I think I got one scholarship in my final year, and I don't even accurately remember which one that was. But no, it was pretty much my school was funded by loans and paying them off on my own accord.
And I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Ryan, I missed your first initial testimony. I apologize for that. But you obviously, I heard you talk about your, you know, behavioral problems. I have them too, so don't feel bad. But right, exactly. But so that was my question: if you had been eligible for, you know, some programs, either state programs or federal programs, or even different programs that the go through our Department of Employment and Economic Development that go to MinSCU for, I thought for students like yourself, but you obviously didn't get directed or steered in that direction?
No.
Thank you. Ms. Johnson, do you have any debt from your paralegal course?
Not yet, but soon. I will. Not yet, hopefully. Okay. I'm going through loans right now. We're looking for a little bit better school loan, so it's about $15,000
for three quarters, so we'll
have a lot in common with debt soon, before I know it.
Ms. Pantola?
Thank you. I, too, have debt. We're getting through it, but just mostly through loans, and I am paying them off by working part-time in a bakery right now, so trying to get them paid off as possible.
Ms. Blankenship?
you're going to have loans to open up that restaurant, I think.
Oh, yes. I'm sure of it. Okay. I didn't graduate yet, so I'm not into the whole college loan thing yet.
Okay.
I probably will be, though.
I bet. And then we have to figure out a way so that they can get those loans. And I bet it's not, Mr. Lydell, is it as easy?
I'm sorry, yeah.
Is it for somebody in a learning center, is it is easy for them to get loans then for their second?
Again, we're all over the water. We're all over the waterfront, Madam Chair, on that. Many of the students who end up in the area learning centers will come from families that have not been to college. Sometimes those families are dysfunctional, which is why a student ends up making the trip to the learning center. And those who have not been exposed to college in their families and those who are dysfunctional, of course, have trouble going through the process of getting the paperwork done, the FAFSA, for instance, the basic document. But that's where we end up helping a lot of people try to address that issue. What is it that to go to college?
Mm-hmm.
There are, because of the minority situations, because of the poverty situations, the hope of access to Pell Grants, et cetera.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your participation today, and especially to the students, Mr. Piccolo, Mr. Englund, Mr. Lydell. Representative Ruth would move the minutes as printed. Are there any additions or corrections? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted, and this meeting is adjourned.